ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Students often hear from their professors that based on the scientific evidence, there should be no way that anyone could believe in God. They assert that the science is proven and God is simply a myth. But what would happen if students heard a different view? We'll find out in just a moment. I'm Robert Crowther at the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, and on today's podcast, we're going to explore what happens when you challenge a worldview that is common in today's modern universities, namely scientific materialism or scientific atheism. Joining us is a professor who did just that and barely survived to tell the tale. That might be a little bit hyperbolic, but he was attacked for presenting an evidence-based case for design and purpose in cosmology, physics, and biochemistry, and it was in an honors class he taught at Ball State University. He has just published his story about that in a new book from Discovery Institute Press, Canceled Science, What Some Atheists Don't Want You to See. And in the book, he recounts the story of how atheists tried to bury the scientific evidence, and he explores discoveries that have revolutionized our understanding of nature and origin of matter, space, and even time itself. The book was recently endorsed by Rice Brooks. Rice Brooks is the author of God's Not Dead. Brooks called the book a profound and insightful look at a vital dimension of scientific inquiry from a courageous scientist. That scientist is professor and now author, Aaron Hedin. Dr. Hedin has a PhD in experimental plasma physics from University of Washington. He has done postdoctoral research at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. He has taught physics and astronomy at Taylor University, Ball State University, and at Biola University. Dr. Aaron Hedin, thank you for being with us on ID the Future.
Well, thank you, Rob. It's a real privilege to be with you here today.
It must be kind of exciting to have your book out, just officially out yesterday, and already seems to be selling quite well and getting a lot of attention.
Yes, it's a real sense of culmination. Been a lot of years working on this book. Very thankful that it's at the point now where others can take a look at it too.
Yeah, I will mention that people can go to discovery.org/canceled. And they can actually download a free chapter from the book, but we hope they go ahead and buy the book. They can get it at Amazon.com and other online bookstores, but they can get that first free chapter at discovery.org/canceled. Tell us, Canceled Science, what's unique about this book? What is it that makes it special?
Well, thank you. It's a story, a chance for me to tell my story about what was happening at Ball State after I had taught my Boundaries of Science course for about 6 years. It was a popular course, and then all of a sudden, coming under attack from outside atheists having nothing to do with the university, who had somehow learned about the course and decided that it violated what they wanted to see taught at a public university. So it's a lot of that story in there, but also I go ahead and detail much of the science that I talked about in the course and add more besides, go more in depth with presenting evidence for an intelligent designer based on what we see in nature.
So the course that you taught at Ball State was called Boundaries of Science. What does Boundaries of Science mean?
Well, it actually grew out of responses that I received from students that I had been teaching in the years prior to my developing the course, where I would ask them, you know, are there any limits to what science or nature can do? And I found a wide variety of responses. Some thought that science would explain everything eventually, and others were pretty convinced right off the bat that no, there are aspects of life and humanity that science cannot explain. So developed the course with that thesis that there are aspects of what we see in this universe that really go beyond what seem to be explainable by just simple application of the laws of nature. So therefore, the title, The Boundaries of Science, just that we live in a natural world and there are natural laws But instead of assuming that these natural laws, given enough time, can produce anything and everything that we see, looking at what are the boundaries to them and finding that much of life, much of the universe transcends those boundaries.
It sounds like exactly what an honors level course might do to promote critical thinking and critical analysis and ask interesting questions. It doesn't seem very threatening.
Well, honestly, the vast majority of students who took the course found it extremely interesting. I taught it for 6 years every year, sometimes two or three times a year, and it was always very popular and fully enrolled, and seemed like the students really enjoyed a venue where they could discuss these issues that were relevant to their lives, not just equations and technical content, but what does this mean for the significance of human life? And so overall, I think it was not threatening to the students. It was actually something that they appreciated.
So you're teaching this class that seems popular. Students are getting something out of it. They're enjoying it. You're minding your own business. You're on tenure track at Ball State. And then a letter arrives. Can you tell about that a little bit? What happened to sort of kick off this series of events?
Well, yes, it was an email that came to the department chair of the Department of Physics and Astronomy, where I was teaching at Ball State, from a fairly vocal, nationally known atheist named Jerry Coyne, who somehow had gotten a hold of the course syllabus, which actually wasn't public. And in his letter to our department chair, he had the opinion that the course was teaching religiously infused material and that it was a violation of the First Amendment. That was a bit of a shocker. But it all kind of went from there. This was in 2013 when this started.
And what was in the syllabus? The syllabus is just the list of the materials that the students will need to read for the class, right?
Well, that was a very small part of the syllabus. Actually, there were only maybe two required texts at that time. One was an astronomy cosmology text, and one was a text that looked a little bit more broadly at the overlap between nature and issues of faith. Huh. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, the course detailed the syllabus detailed the course schedule, what kind of assignments would be due and when, and that sort of a thing. And there was a bibliography that I included at the end with a few dozen books and articles that I had read. That bibliography was never in any way an assigned reading list. And I think that that was part of a kind of a misconstrual. People, perhaps in the atheist world, assumed that I was assigning everything on the list to read, but it wasn't a part of that. When students had to do a book review, for example, they were allowed to go to the Ball State Library and pick any book they wanted that had any relevance to the topics of cosmology, or even philosophy of science and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And so the bibliography is what they were really upset by, is that you might suggest that people read a book that maybe had a more positive view of intelligent design or offered some sort of argument in favor of design in nature. And that was what upset Jerry Coyne and these other atheists.
I believe that was part of it. But honestly, it's these books, all written by reputable scientists, that perhaps don't get much attention in public education, presenting evidence from science just as factually as any textbook I've ever taught out of, but just highlighting aspects of that evidence that might point to something beyond naturalism.
Right. And you do that in Canceled Science as well. I mean, it's not just the story of what happened, although that's part of it, but you talk about some of the convincing evidence for design that you see in the universe, right?
Yes. And for me, that's one of perhaps the most important part of the book. I mean, the story is a human interest story and relevant for the times we live in. But I really feel like a presentation of the evidence that is growing all the time that shows and points towards an intelligent source and intelligent design of our universe is the key, the most important part of the book. I do hope people will gain from that and find out that, yeah, there's more to this universe than just blind forces and materialism.
Right. Can you give us an example of one or two things that you talk about in the book?
Well, sure. Probably I start off with the story of cosmology and the origin of the universe and evidence that the universe came into being by a transcendent cause. And I look a lot at throughout different chapters on evidence for fine-tuning of the laws and parameters of nature that are fine-tuned to allow for the existence of life. And all of this is consistent, I believe, with what we would expect if the universe was created by a designer. And then we go into looking at more on the biological side of things and examining the origin of life, which I believe completely transcends anything that nature is capable of on its own, no matter what the time frame. And I'm looking at all these issues as a physicist. So in physics, we study the laws of nature, and in particular, the forces of nature and the parameters and what they can do, and maybe more importantly for this book, what they can't do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I see within the laws of nature that suggests that they can create the specified complexity of living organisms, the biochemical complexity within the cell, and all of that. There's no mechanism that directly brings it about. And if you say, well, chance could do it, I think that you have a misunderstanding of how low the probability is for any of that to ever come about on its own. And then I even go into some aspects of nature which are tied to our own human experience, our own minds and the human soul and spirit, appreciation of beauty, and how that also points towards evidence for something beyond nature as a source.
So when you present this with students, I find it fascinating. I'm interested in science, obviously. They are in an honors course about science. Did students get engaged by this discussion? Were they interested in hearing this? Because I'm guessing they don't get a lot of things that point in that direction in other classes.
Yes, that's exactly right. And when I received comments at the end of the semester from students, these were the comments along this line that mostly came through. They were thankful finally for a course that included the freedom to discuss some of these bigger issues. And, you know, so a lot of times I would break up the class of usually 25 students into groups of about five or so. And then I'd write a question on the board and just let them discuss it for 10 minutes. And I basically just stayed out of the way. And then we all got together as a class and have each group give some feedback on what they said. And I'd, you know, write their responses on the board and help facilitate further dialogue. So I think it was a real student-engaged course. Mm-hmm. I always found it very energizing to be a part of the course there at Ball State. I think it was my favorite course that I had to teach at that time.
And here come these critics, atheists, many of them, maybe not all, but they challenge this on the grounds of the First Amendment that you were doing something wrong because it's a state university.
Right. And, you know, appealing to the idea of separation of church and state.
Right.
And, you know, it's probably not my place to get into a defense of the First Amendment, but it struck me as a bit of an overreach to accuse me of violating the First Amendment.
Yes.
You know, I certainly wasn't preaching in the course, wasn't trying to establish the First Church of Ball State, or wasn't forcing any sort of religious view upon students. I had plenty of atheist students who would write their final papers just promoting a completely atheistic viewpoint. And, you know, they were graded fairly, just like any other student, based on how well they wrote the paper and documented it and so on. And, you know, so
right.
They would get an A as well as anybody else. And so I was somewhat horrified, actually, at the idea that it had somehow been portrayed as a case of me pushing anything upon students, mm-hmm. sort of religion. I mean, students don't like that, and they like to be able to think for themselves. And it was an honor just to be able to promote discussion.
And shouldn't academic freedom provide protection for a professor in a classroom, especially to engage big questions, let alone present some differing viewpoint that maybe points to evidence in nature of design or what some people see as that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe that it does. And in fact, if you look at the statements in support of academic freedom that Ball State had, it certainly defended presenting minority viewpoints and that sort of thing within a class. The interesting tactic that the university took at that time, and I'm not sure they would do the same thing now, but they decided that it wasn't a question of academic freedom. It was a question of what they called academic integrity. The thought behind that was that any sort of discussion leading to consideration of intelligent design was, in their words, not science. Hmm. Since this was a science course, that was off topic and therefore inappropriate. You know, in my mind, that was a bit of a dance around the issue, but that's what they used eventually to cancel the course.
Wow. Well, I appreciate your discussing it with us today. People will have to get the book and read it to get the entire story and find out some of the other things that you present there around the evidence for design in nature and the fine tuning of the universe and so on. People can get the first chapter for free. You can go to discovery.org/canceled. That's discovery.org/canceled. And you can get a free sample chapter from the book there. And hopefully they'll go on and buy the book too. Read the whole thing and share it with their friends and family.
Well, I hope so.
I want to thank you again, Eric, for being with us, and tell everybody again, discovery.org/canceled. Get that free chapter there, and be sure to stay tuned to evolutionnews.org for news about the book and other books and other events that we have coming up, and stay tuned to ID the Future at idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.